Okay, everyone, I think we are ready to get started. If you saw the screen disappear for just a moment, that wasn't your imagination. I just had one program that I didn't want interrupting us. Thank you for joining us this afternoon. My name is Catherine Matto. I work with the Fulbright U.S. Scholar Program as the application and selection lead. We offer an ongoing series of webinars throughout our competition cycle on a variety of topics, and today I'll be focusing on how to complete the application for the Fulbright U.S. Scholar Program. Now, today is Friday, August 28th, for whoever who needs that. I know this webinar was rescheduled from earlier this week, and I appreciate your patience on that. I was unexpectedly offline due to a family emergency, and I'm really glad to be here with you this afternoon. So for this webinar, I will share the essentials of applying to the Fulbright U.S. Scholar Program before spending some quality time in the application itself. I'll be focusing on the nuts and bolts of the application system rather than helping you to select an award, prepare your application materials, and determine if you're eligible for the application. I'll also provide a summary of the review and selection process toward the end. Now, to be clear, we're talking about the U.S. Scholar Program, meaning the opportunities for U.S. citizens applying to go abroad. I hope to answer many of your questions over the course of the webinar, and I'm also saving some time at the end for questions and answers. If you have any questions, please go ahead and use that questions module on your screen. You can type right into there. That said, while I can talk fast, and I will try not to talk too fast this afternoon, I still may run out of time at the end. So please feel free to email us afterward if I didn't get to your question or if you have something really specific to ask. Finally, this webinar is being recorded and we'll post the presentation with active hyperlinks as well as the recording on our website for your reference in the next few days. I've heard it can be a really great way to fall asleep in the evening or the afternoon. Okay, so let's go. The Fulbright Program was established in 1946 to promote mutual understanding between the people of the United States and the people of other countries of the world. Now, for more than 60 years, the Fulbright Scholar Program, which is the U.S. government's flagship academic exchange program, has been administered by the Council for International Exchange of Scholars at the Institute of International Education. We work on behalf of the U.S. Department of State, the Bureau of Educational and Cultural Affairs, and we work in concert with U.S. embassies and Fulbright commissions abroad on program and administration. The Scholar Program is comprised of several kinds of opportunities, including for teaching, research, and professional projects. Regarding eligibility, for all of our U.S. Scholar Programs, U.S. citizenship is required. Can we just do a really quick sound check? I'm seeing a couple of comments from folks saying that they can't hear me, so I just want to make sure. Okay, perfect. Thank you. Okay, so back to eligibility. So in terms of degrees and experience, you can see here on the screen that this varies by award, but we do encourage you to review the eligibility tab on the U.S. Scholar Program page. And all of the links and everything are on our website, so it might not be hyperlinked on your screen right now, but once we get that PowerPoint and presentation and everything out to you after it's up online, you'll be able to click the links through there. But everything is right on our website as well. So you can also poke around there, and I'll get to exploring a little bit of that in a few minutes. So I also want to highlight that if you're applying for one of the International Education Administrator Seminars, these are short-term programs designed for university administrators. We did record an IEA-specific application walkthrough in May that you might find a little bit more helpful as it's more tailored to that special program. Okay, so moving on, I think we're okay on the sound piece. Hopefully everyone is getting all of that figured out. So selecting and understanding the awards and figuring out the process. As we have a number of webinars that delve further into this part of the process, I'm going to move pretty quickly through this so that we can spend some more time in the application. The process often looks something like this. You, the applicant, have an idea or maybe a few ideas for a project and then decide on the location for it. Or you might have a location in mind and you design the project around that location. regardless, you have to start looking at the catalog of awards to see what awards are offered that might be a good fit for you and your project. Each country that we work with offers awards that are listed in this catalog, and each award contains important information describing the qualification necessary, the parameters of the grant, and other pertinent details. And all awards have four parts that are highlighted here on the screen: the award details, the award requirements, award benefits, and the country and area overview. You'll find in exploring that awards vary widely, even within the same country. So before applying, you should read the award description carefully, all four of these parts. Consider your background, your expertise, and the project you've conceived to help identify the award that fits best. You'll also find contact information in the awards, and my colleagues are happy to help answer your questions. Okay, so you've chosen an award, and you've refined the project, and next you need to apply. In a moment, I'll walk you through the application, and then I'll briefly review what happens after you submit the application, that review and selection process. So in order to apply, you have to prepare that application package, and that package should really clearly describe your proposed project, and that package should demonstrate your preparation, your background, and your experience. On our website, we have more guidance on these components and what the supporting documents should contain. I do want to highlight one point here, and I'll try to come back to it a bit later to give you a little bit more context. But while the Fulbright program is an international exchange program, it's about the advancement of our mission of fostering mutual understanding between nations. It's about advancing knowledge across communities and improving lives around the world. These are really key parts, the heart of the program. And at the same time, it's a very specific project that you're proposing to do, right? So your project statement really should think about all of these things, as well as addressing the technical aspects that your peers, experts in your field, would expect, while also being understandable to a non-expert. So I want to highlight that all of these items, the components, are explained in more detail on our website. So I'd like to actually jump into the application itself. So let's see. I'm going to proceed to the application, and I'm going to sort of navigate to it from the catalog so that you can see how to get from here to there. So let me see if I can do that easily for you. Switch screen to here we are. Okay, so we're on the, I don't want to pause. There we go. Okay. There we are. Now we're back on the screen. Okay, so move from the PowerPoint over to our U.S. Scholar or our Fulbright Scholar website. And from here, you can click on Programs and go to the U.S. Scholar Program to see the U.S. Program page. I happen to have a tab already open with our awards catalog. It's awards.cies.org. So if you were to select a country or select a discipline, I'm going to select Romania here, random decision here this afternoon. So you can see the number of awards that Romania offers. We have an all-disciplines award. We have a number of other awards that you can see here. Some are in a specific field. Some are at a specific institution. These are all things that you'll want to pay attention to. So you can click into that award, and then you'll read all of the different details about this award. And then you can click on Begin Application. And that will take you over here, back to the CIS page. And there's an application box that you can click on to go to the application. So that will take me over here to the application management. And let me enter my information. So I already have a username and password set up. And let me actually type this in. Hopefully I typed this. Nope. Here we are. Okay. Okay, great. Getting into an application is always the tricky part, right? So we're in. But I did want to, well, after I was done figuring out my password, as I'm sure you all can relate, I wanted to highlight a couple, more than a couple of tips, actually. So for browser, you'll see that, or you may have noticed that I am using Chrome. We do encourage the use of Chrome. It seems to be the browser that works best, but the application should be completable on any of the major browsers. You can work on an over a number of days, so you can start it today or tomorrow and keep working on it up until the application deadline. You can also continue working on it over that course, and the answers that you're submitting should automatically save, but you'll want to click a continue button that'll show you in a few minutes to keep saving it and to keep moving on. But regardless of what browser you use, I know I tend to keep a lot of different tabs open, so just really make sure that you're only keeping the application open in one tab, because what could happen is if you have it open in one and then you open like 30 other tabs and then you open it in another, one of those tabs could overwrite the other, and short version is it could get really messy, so just make sure that you have the application open only in one tab in your browser. Just keep it clean. The application itself should be fairly intuitive to use. That said, we do ask that you read the questions and the instructions carefully in there. We've written it to be hopefully as clear as possible, but this is every year a work in progress that we try to improve on what we have in here. So the application also contains fields that you're required to complete. We've identified those with an asterisk. If they're not completed, you'll be reminded before submitting to make sure to go back and complete those fields. There are also text boxes where you'll need to be mindful of character limits, and for document uploads, there will be page limits that you'll encounter. And for those character limits, I just want to note that the character limits include letters and numbers and punctuation and spaces. You may want to draft those responses in a Word document and then paste them in, but still double check that that response wasn't cut off in the text box. And if you're entering the list, we suggest removing any paragraph spaces when possible. Okay, so I navigated to the application. So in this case, my test application, I had tried to apply last year, and am looking to apply again this year. Maybe I wasn't successful last year, or in this case, I just didn't finish. I didn't submit my application last year. So I'm going to start a new application, and I'm going to hopefully start the right application. Oh my goodness, this was not something I was expecting to encounter. Okay, so this is not something that you will see. This is sheerly my luck. Oh my goodness. Okay, so Fulbright program, U.S. Scholar program. Your view will be a lot simpler in this. So you'll have a new application. It'll be a lot simpler. It'll only have a couple of options maybe for you to choose from. And then you'll land on this welcome page. So this welcome page has instructions. It has links. It also has links to instructions, where we have a link to a PDF document that helps to walk you through a lot of this as well. For the Scholar Program and the Public Policy Fellowship, our International Education Administrator Seminars, and our Arctic Initiative. So if we continue on, I'm going to trust that you've read all of this. I'm not going to read it to you. And then we have a question on data privacy. We do take your data privacy seriously, and we ask that you answer the question here. If you say no, your application will not proceed, or will not be able to proceed further in the application. If you answer yes, then you will. You can go back and change your answer, and that will, depending on your response and your change, change what comes next in the application. So I said yes to reviewing my application materials and everything, and have I had a grant previously? No, I have not. You'll want to read this here if you have had a grant previously, and I am a U.S. citizen, or at least my test application here is for a U.S. citizen. Maybe I'm also a dual citizen with Jordan, so I can indicate that here, and I'm applying for the U.S. Scholar Program. Now, here's a question that comes up. So, are you applying to an award that allows for grant activities in multiple countries? Today, I'm not. Today, I wanted to apply for that award in Romania. So, I'm going to go here, and I'm going to choose Romania. I'm going to hit save. I'm going to select my award. It is the All Disciplines Award that I'm applying to. And then I can continue on. Now, say I've changed my mind, and actually I want to apply to go to Romania, and I want to go to another country. So I would say yes, that I'm applying to a ward that allows for grant activities in multiple countries. So I went back to that preliminary questions page, and I changed my answer there, and then I'm able to change my award. And let's change it to the Fulbright Global Scholar Award. That will allow me to go to both of those countries. Okay, so I still want to go to Romania. So I can use my keyboard to type in here. And maybe my second country is, it's not going to be in Europe. So Uganda sounds like a great second country to go to. So I've got Romania and Uganda. And I'm going to go ahead and continue. But, oh, wait, sorry. I didn't mean to choose Uganda. So I'm going to reset this. I'm going to go back and click on Global Scholar Award again, and that will clear these two countries. I still want to go to Romania, but actually, instead of Uganda, I really want to go to Kenya. Once I find it in the alphabet. There we go. So there's Kenya. Okay, and now I can continue. So if you need to change your countries or change the award, just go back to those preliminary questions in that country and award section, and you can change those or use that to reset it. Then you'll continue on through the questions here, and you can go ahead through all of these questions. I'm going to... go through these, and a lot of this, of course, I read all of this before, so I'm kind of fast-forwarding a lot of these answers so you can get a sneak peek at what we are asking you and some of the pitfalls that people encounter. So I had entered one dependent on the prior page. Maybe that's my spouse, maybe that's my child. And enter their information. Okay, if you've joined us a little bit late, don't worry. We are recording this, so you'll be able to see this later. So I continued on from the dependent information because I indicated that I had one dependent coming with me. If that changes while I'm working on the application, I just go back to the personal information and take them out. It's not a big deal if that changes. We realize that dependents can change. We can add to our families. Our families can get smaller for a variety of different reasons. So that can easily be changed later on in the process. So for the contact information for this page, this is your home, your residential address. We ask that you not use abbreviations, and we do ask that you use your full 9-digit zip code. So you'll want to enter this. You'll see that the country started with the first piece that was entered. If I were to change this country, then the other fields would change as well. Okay, is my current address the same as my permanent mailing address? Right now it is, but if it weren't, you would have an opportunity to enter your current mailing address. Now, I will say that most of the communication that you'll be receiving will be by email, but it is helpful for us to know if your if you're not living in the U.S. currently. So in case something does need to be mailed to you, we have the right address for you. So moving on to the phone numbers, please enter those here. I have some numbers kind of pre-populated, so I will pull those in. Primary email address, that will pull in from when you created your account. And you'll also want to provide a secondary email address. We do encourage you to enter an alternate email address for this section just in case that primary email address changes. We know that that does happen on occasion, so it's helpful for us to have an alternative way to get a hold of you. We also ask for your emergency contact information at this phase in the process. Let me type that in. I'm not feeling especially creative on these responses this afternoon. So let's see, for my title today. So many of you, I know many of you are faculty, many of you are professionals. So I'm going to enter my application today as an independent scholar, and that's fine. Many of our awards are open to academics and professionals. And actually, so I'm looking back at the award. I'm glad I checked this. So for this award, U.S. faculty must hold the rank, at least the rank of assistant professor. This isn't going to be the case for all awards, but it is in this particular case. So if that were still the case, if I were still applying for Romania, that would be an issue. But as I'm applying for the Global Scholar Award, the requirements are a little bit different. So again, you'll just want to double check as you're working through all of this. So this is where you enter your title and your home institution. Okay, so entering this in. I'm still here, don't worry. Okay, found the country for this and going to enter this. So the next question here is indicating what kind of role you have. In this case, I've indicated that I'm an independent scholar. If you were a faculty member or a professional, that's where you would enter this. It's really more for us to gather more information about our applicant pool. So here's where you would upload your CV or resume. I have a file already for this that you probably can't see me upload right now, but you click on the choose file and you're able to upload that, and it'll show you whether or not you have exceeded the page limit. So here is the 6 pages. You can click on preview and then continue on. So you'll want to read the employment eligibility. So if you have, if you or your immediate family have worked for the Department of State, USAID, or a public or private organization under contract to one of these, you'd be ineligible to apply until 1 year after that employment had ended. In this case, I will say no. If you say yes, you'll be asked to enter information in a text box here. The next question is about your academic history. So you'll enter your information here. And let's see, Syracuse, New York, State Office Postgraduate. Here you can see maybe it was a Master's of Architecture. And then you'll select here, maybe that was May 2004. Sounds great. So this is one example of entering an awarded degree. We ask that you enter any awarded degrees or any degree in progress, and you can also indicate, so the date degree received, you can also enter the date the degree is expected to be conferred or if the degree is not expected to be awarded. So next, it asks about whether or not you're a postdoctoral applicant, so you would indicate there. If you are and you have completed your degree requirements, great. if you are a postdoctoral requirement and your requirements are still in progress, you indicate there. And then if you're not a postdoctoral applicant, you would indicate there. So our accomplishments, these are five, and they can include, or up to five, they can include honors and awards and publications and exhibitions, et cetera. They would be professional accomplishments. This is a 700 character limit field, including spaces and punctuation. So you can enter this as a list. But just make sure that you don't have like extra spaces between your lines. Okay, so then it goes into experience abroad and prior grants. So if you have experience abroad lasting three consecutive months or longer, and that's including cumulative time over a year, then you would enter that here. So that's what this is. This is what that looks like. So maybe I was in Italy for research on architectural styles in Italy sounds wonderful right now. Maybe that was in 2017 for several months. So July, August, September, October. That's 3 months. I did have my fingers out and was counting. Okay, so then next up we have prior Fulbright grants. If you have had a grant previously, you would indicate yes to either of these questions as appropriate and enter that here. Now, if you had applied this past year and were selected or not selected, and needed to enter that here, you can. Enter that here. In this case, this test applicant had a grant in 2016-2017. They've met the two-year waiting period between grants and have entered that here. Okay, so a question came in about okay, so one of the common questions that comes in is if I have a lot of experience abroad and it isn't all in one chunk, you can indicate that in your CV. You can list that here. I think we have spots for up to 10 on here, but you can also add that as like a page in your CV. Put it in a table or something, make it as easy for both you to calculate to make sure that you're eligible, and make it easy for us to also see when we see your application later on to make sure that you're eligible. So just keeping that as simple and as clear as possible is most appreciated. The duration and the location and that kind of thing. So next, I'm moving on to the award details. So this is getting into the fun stuff about your proposed project. So here you enter your academic discipline. So I think I had said that I was in architecture. I think I have some legal studies within the college that I'm working at and architecture. So I leave it to you all to figure out how that all fits together. But architecture, so our primary specialization within architecture, maybe that is, let's see, architecture and urban planning. That sounds great. And then I'm channeling George Costanza here for any Seinfeld fans. Other specializations, we have architecture, legal studies around urban planning. Now I'm just making stuff up. Moving on, so that just gives us a little bit more insight about your proposed project and the disciplines that you will, so if you have like a multidiscipline project, you can enter more information about this here. It just gives us a little bit more insight as to what you're proposing to do. So I said that I was in architecture, so that allows me to upload a portfolio. If I were in law, then I would not be uploading a portfolio of materials. These are only for those who are in the creative fields like architecture and the arts and performing arts, journalism and creative writing. So that page would only appear for those fields. So you'll also indicate, I'll show you more about the portfolio in just a minute. The next question is about activities where you may need a license to practice, and this is specifically regarding medicine and nursing and clinical care. In this case, my project does not have anything to do with those, but if it did, there would be a text box where you could explain that. So for the grant activity, for this project, I am proposing a combined teaching and research project, and I will have a 70-30 split, so 70% teaching, 30% research, and my grant, I hope to start in March of 2022, and I hope it will be 6 months, so about 3 months in each country. I'm not proposing flex. This is a required question this year, so if flex is an option for your award, we're asking for you to indicate how many segments. In this case, I'm not wishing to do any. I want to do the whole 6 months all in one run. Okay, so project title and abstract. This should be a concise title regarding your project. So the project title ideally would not be research in Italy on architecture. It would be something a little bit more descriptive so that those reading your application would have a better sense of what you're proposing to do. That title will later appear in our directory of Scholar alumni if you're selected for a grant. So having, I don't know if you've had a chance to use that directory to look up some alumni in your field, but having a little bit more in that project title can be really helpful for future use as well. Let's see. So the project abstract, this is the summary about your proposal. Okay, and this is another one of those spots where this text box, you can totally write that in Microsoft Word or something outside of the application and then copy it right into here. So in terms of this section and any of the other text boxes, you'll just want to be mindful of the space here. For punctuation, please just use proper capitalization and all throughout the application. Okay, so host institution, let's see, I was proposing to go to Kenya and Romania. This is where, let's see, okay, so we've got an institution here and so I don't know if you saw how I did this. So I actually copied the institution name from over here in the award, and then I copied it right in here. But you can also type it in, and it will pop up, which is pretty cool. And then if you have other institutions, you can enter them here. I'm still working on the institution where I want to go in Kenya, so that I will add when I come back to the application later before I submit it. Now the invitation letter goes here, and this is where you would upload this. If you have more than one invitation letter, a couple notes on invitation letters. They should be addressed to you personally as the applicant. You are the one who's being invited. And second, if you have more than one, you will need to upload those together as a single file. Now, if you are going ahead and uploading it and submitting your application and you receive the second one later, so if you receive it between when you submit the application rather and October 15th, just go ahead and email us, and there's contact information here. You can email us and we can help to merge those in your application. Once you submit the application, you won't be able to edit these sections, so we can step in to help with that, and we're happy to do so. In terms of the content for what goes into the invitation letter, if I go here to additional guidance, that will open in a new tab and explain a little bit more about an invitation letter. So an invitation is inviting you to be host institution or the host country to conduct your project. Some awards require an invitation, some prefer them, some have them as optional, and others say, don't even seek them, we will place you entirely. So it really varies by award, so I would check the award description. If I go back to that award for Romania here, it does say that it's preferred, but that's not the same as being required. And you can see here, even where it's required, there is an extended deadline for obtaining those letters. We do hope that you're able to obtain it even before you submit on or before September 15th. I'm sure that will help you to sleep a little bit easier at night, but we also realize that many countries and many places are still experiencing some delays, and this being August, many of our collaborators abroad are still on some summer leave. Okay, so we do have guidance on obtaining an invitation letter. So we have some information on developing contacts abroad. We also have, let me go back to the award tab. Here we have some information here. Some of the awards have more specific information like this one. This is the commission will arrange the affiliation for those institutions, for applicants whose projects are not located at a specific institution, and they have contact information. Some awards have this information and this kind of contact, others don't. But that's where you'll want to take a look at the award description to see what information is available, what you need to provide in your application, and where we can also help in that process. Okay, so there are ethical requirements we want you to consider. Many applicants have asked about, before I go on to that, there's a question about if you haven't identified the name of the host but may by October 15th, can you leave the name blank? You can leave the name blank. You can also enter it, and we can change that for you later once you get that invitation letter. So if it changes, I would say that could go kind of either way on that. Okay, so the next question is about ethical requirements, and it's not actually a question, but people ask us questions about IRB. Now, IRB, for those who are affiliated with institutions, this is something that would be worked on with your home institution, with your employer. So that would be something that wouldn't necessarily be part of the application process. You're welcome to mention it as, you know, something that you're planning or undertaking, and your home, your host institution or your host country may also have an IRB process if you're selected. I know a number of countries that we partner with have a process in place for that to make sure that anyone or animal serving as a research subject is being taken care of appropriately. There isn't a specific question, but we do want you to be aware of this. Okay, if you're not affiliated with a host institution, we, again, want you to just take a look at this information, but there isn't a specific question for it. So it says, finally, while IRB approval is not required at the time of application, scholars selected for grants must abide by all ethical requirements. So we want to make sure that you are proceeding ethically. Okay, so last question on this page. I want to keep an eye on the clock. Alternate countries and awards. So many times an applicant will ask us, I'm applying for this one award, but could you also just please consider me for this other award? No, that's not the way the process works. So we can, you can indicate that you're willing to be considered for other awards, but that's really not driven by the applicant. It's really driven by the process. If you were to indicate this, that is great, but that does not mean that there is any chance that that will actually happen, that this is really on the off chance, the rare chance that an opportunity should open up for an applicant who was recommended following the peer review process. So, and I'll explain that part of the process in a little bit. You can enter information here. It's great to enter information here, but really tailor your application to the country and the project that you're proposing. You only have 5 pages in that project statement, so you want to use them wisely, right? Okay, so speaking of the project documents, so new this year, we have a series of text boxes that address several questions that were previously included in the project statement. So we are saving you some space in your project statement this year. You can also find these prompts for this section on the US Scholar page on our website. So if I navigate back over there, there's this application tab, and you can see the project statement requirements tab, or section rather, opens up a new tab. And then we have these questions, the short essay questions are listed here. So you can totally see these in advance and how many characters there are for each of these text boxes before copying them into the application itself. The application system may time out while you're drafting, which is why we keep why I keep mentioning drafting them offline. I'd hate for that to happen. I know how frustrating that can be. And it's also not really like a huge box either. So it may just be physically easier to write and review in Word. And then you also have the character count function there. And then just make sure to click continue at the bottom as you're working on that. So then this is where you upload the project statement. I'm going to choose my file. And in this case, I'm going to choose one. Okay, so I go back down. Okay, so I've creatively named it, you know, whatever. The file name is, it says CV, but it's meant to be the project statement, and it's too long, so it says 14 pages, and we'll come back to that to see what happens there. The bibliography, so I, in this case, have selected a teaching and research project, so I have to have a bibliography, and I have to have a syllabus or course outline. Now, if I were only applying for research, then I would still have to have the bibliography, but I should not also include the syllabi and course outlines. Conversely, if there is, if I'm applying for only teaching, I would only have the syllabi and course outlines, and I would not have the bibliography. The application is actually coded to hide those depending on what grant activity is selected. So you would not include the other document if that's not needed for that particular project or activity type. The kind of bibliography, it's up to you, it's up to 3 pages. I don't want to spend a lot of time on this, but it can be a list. The format is really up to you. It can be an annotated list. As long as, you know, the formatting of the reference style is consistent, I think you're pretty well good to go there. But it really should demonstrate the current research that's being done on the topic. In your field, it can even reference other fields. That can actually be really helpful to know that you've thought about what's being done in other fields relevant to what you're proposing to do. Okay, syllabi and course outlines. I'm going to refer you to the content requirements on our page for that. Typically, it's syllabi that would be uploaded. In some cases, that might be course outlines, but it's really up to I would take a look at the award description to see if there's any requirements there, and then up to you as the applicant to determine what's going to be most appropriate. Okay, so next up we have language skills. So this is where the foreign language evaluation is located. So in this case, I may need one language. Let's see, we'll go back to our plans to go to Romania. Let's be realistic. I have no ability whatsoever in Romanian. So let's see. I have not taken a language proficiency test. Okay. Previous use, I do not have. See if I can spell right in English. Do not have experience with Romanian, but plan to take classes. Okay, so I am planning to take classes over the next 12 months to prepare for my project. Now, in this case, for some awards, there it says, you know, the language proficiency is English, so say you're proposing to go to Australia, In some cases, maybe you have to have the local language. You're proposing to go to maybe Chile, and you have to have Spanish in order to do the teaching. Don't quote me on that. I'm making things up again. But look at the awards, right? So here it says language, you know, the per the award description requirements in the catalog, the award has the following requirement. So it says none, English is sufficient. However, feasibility of conducting the project has to be demonstrated in the project statement. So this is where in my project statement, I would address that, you know, I don't speak Romanian. I'm planning on taking more classes and bringing myself up to speed. And these are the other ways that I will either not need Romanian or be able to work around that, working with someone who does speak it or what have you, depending on what's going to be appropriate for my project. So then I would continue on and go on to the recommendation and foreign language evaluations. So in this case, I need to register, let's register a recommender. Let's see. Okay, so I'm registering the recommender here. Obviously, don't use this information. it's a test, you know, test account for you to be able to see this. The email needs to go to the actual recommender for them to upload their recommendation letter. And you can even write a note here. So, dear Dr. Smith, you can write a note here. And then you would indicate whether or not you waive your right okay, and then you would actually type in your full legal name here, and then that would send it to the recommender. So you need two recommendations. You need to register them both before you submit the application. This should be someone who knows you and your work well. We do have more guidance on the website about who can serve as a recommender. We also have more information about what kind of questions they're asked. So we have posted the prompts that they receive. For the foreign language evaluation, they receive a form to complete to assess your language skills for reading and writing and speaking. And I think there's a little bit more information that they're asked to address there. So I would have a second person here, but if I needed to change this, you can click Edit. And you can send them a reminder. Maybe it's getting close to the deadline and you need to send them that reminder. Or maybe you realized, actually, I spelled their email address wrong, so I need to fix that. So you would exclude them and then click OK. And then you could enter them again with the correct email address. So I mentioned that portfolio, because I had selected architecture as my discipline. So here is where I would select the files that I need. And let's see, I'm going to, for the sake of this process, I'm going to select just a PDF file that I have. Maybe these are some design files that I have. If you are in one of these fields and you choose not to upload materials, there is a spot where you can indicate and describe why. That is also okay, and then you can actually preview your materials here. Okay, so moving on to the certification, you read this whole paragraph. You certify that the information that you've provided is true, accurate, and complete, that, you know, any falsification or misrepresentation or omission can result in withdrawing of the application or termination or revocation of any award granted. I will let you read the rest of this, and you type your full name, and then you can continue on to the review box. So here, or the review page, rather. So here, you saw that I didn't complete everything in the application. So this is where it's telling me, go back to the project documents page. You've missed some things. And I mentioned that I had purposely uploaded a project statement that was too long, so you can see where that error came up. The recommendations, I'm missing recommenders here. I haven't certified it. So you're going to see these errors. If anything is missing along the way. You'll also see, depending on the award, if an invitation letter is needed, you may see this warning. It won't necessarily prevent you from, it won't prevent you from submitting the application. So it actually says you can submit your, you may submit your application without an invitation letter. But if it's required and not provided by the deadline, then your application might not proceed in the review process. So that warning won't prevent you, but it is there to warn you, just in case you forgot to upload it because you may have had it or may have received it in the time that you were working on this, to go back and do that. So then if you click on any of these links, you can go back to that page and, I mean, here it's pretty clear what's missing, but you may have to look a little bit more closely to see what's missing. Okay, so we have a few more minutes, barely. I want to get through the next couple of pieces on the quick side, and then I'm happy to stay on for a few more minutes to answer some questions, but I want to go back to the PowerPoint. Let me get that cooperating again, hopefully. Where'd I go? Okay, so here we are. We're on the application walkthrough, and now we've walked through the application. We still have some questions to answer, I know, but I wanted to talk through the application cycle and what happens next. So the first stage, my colleagues and I will conduct a preliminary check of all of the submitted applications for eligibility and completeness. Then all complete and eligible applications will undergo peer review. So in this process, experts in your field review your application against the review criteria to determine whether or not it's recommended for further consideration. Following peer review, you'll be notified of the outcome. This is typically in December. And you'll be notified whether or not your application was recommended or not recommended for further consideration. For applications that were recommended in peer review, the next stage has multiple concurrent steps. There's the in-country review by the host country or countries, and they review at the same time if there's more than one. There is the Fulbright Foreign Scholarship Board review, and then the U.S. Department of State reviews and approves. So we have to have all three of those decisions before we can notify applicants of the final outcome. That is, whether or not they've been selected for an award or named an alternate. So you might be wondering what criteria are used to evaluate applications in the review and selection process, and we do have this posted on our website. The super short version, live captions, thank you for telling me that there is a window blocking your view. I appreciate that. Hopefully that's, the whole screen is viewable now. Okay, so ultimately, those reviewing your application expect you to demonstrate that you're qualified and able to undertake your project, that you can adapt it if needed, that your rationale for applying to this country is sound, that it will have a broad and sustainable impact, and that you're adaptable and culturally sensitive. You need to show that you've read the syllabus, I mean award description, and that you've done your homework. Please remember that your application will be read by peers from institutions across the United States and potentially those in the host countries. This means that it needs to be clear, concise, and compelling, preemptively answering any questions they may have. Those reading your application may not be familiar with you or your work or your field specifically to really understand the specific context of some of it. Basically, you want to make sure that you're connecting all of the dots rather than leaving them to come to their own conclusion, which in some cases might not be the one that you intended. Alumni have reported that having a colleague read their statement of intent, or rather project statement, before submitting it was especially helpful. Okay, so we have a lot of resources on our website for you to access. I've mentioned we obviously have the catalog of awards. I've shown you a little bit of the application tab and the guidelines that we have there. We have project statement guidelines and guidelines for all of the other components, including the recommendations. We have more webinars. We've had a ton of webinars already, so I can't recommend those enough as a great informational tool for you. And we also have really terrific alumni as well as colleagues here at IIE and CIS to be a resource for you. So I'm about to start answering questions. I'll do my best to get to them all, but I know we have a short amount of time and a lot questions. So I can stay on for a little bit, but ask for a little bit of patience. And if I don't get to yours, please go ahead and email us afterward. Let's see. Okay. Dual citizenship with a potential host country, does that affect eligibility? It depends on the country. In some cases, it does. In most cases, it does not. But that will be clearly stated in the award requirements in the award description. So I would definitely check there. Are there any special requirements for spouses who accompany you on your Fulbright? Generally, no, but I would check the award description. I think check the award description, and it depends are often like the two most common responses that we have for things. We don't have to have an excellent network to apply, in fact. I think a lot of times with the invitation letters, sometimes it is being patient. Sometimes it's also looking to the award. Sometimes the award, if the invitation is not requirement, then the host country may be able to help place you. But I wouldn't necessarily let the challenge of having contacts abroad necessarily deter you. I think a lot of you'd be in good company with that. Okay. Let's see. Hopefully we had a question about where to upload syllabi was answered. Please email us later if not. Is having a non-Fulbright semester abroad teaching 3 years ago in another country a problem? It's not. It's if you were to have, I think, 5 out of the last 6 years abroad, that would be an eligibility issue. And in fact, actually having that semester abroad, whether it was for Fulbright or not for Fulbright, could be a benefit. And it's up to you to help to demonstrate that. Okay, the CV section, there should only be one CV in your application. I think the application will prevent you from ultimately submitting if you upload more than one file. So it should be your a comprehensive CV that's going to be relevant and tailored to the particular award that you're applying to. Let's see. Okay, so to what extent is the invitation letter incorporated into the review criteria? That is a great question, and it is somewhat incorporated into the review criteria, but because it is very much dependent on the award as to how required it is, if that's it's a terrible way to say that, I realize that. But the degree of requirement of the invitation letter will have, I think, more impact on eligibility than on the review, the peer review piece of it. But this also depends on how you present this in the application, where having the invitation letter and really thinking through and doing the homework can be beneficial, but really thinking through and doing the homework and not having an invitation list, you've demonstrated that, that can also, I think, help to demonstrate that you've spent the time and really thought about this and really done what you can to prepare. We realize that not everyone in the U.S. is great about answering emails and that also can be the case abroad. Let's see. This is, so I have a question about attaching additional materials that are not part of the application. So I know for the applications in the arts, like the architecture example I presented, in that case you could upload portfolio materials, but if you're in a different field and naturally that section doesn't appear, uploading additional materials like, oh, I'm, you know, super proud of this publication I just of this recent publication. I would love to include it because it totally ties in with what I'm proposing to do. And that's really great. We would love to be able to include that, but we can't include that for every applicant. So we ask that you actually not include that. We want you to highlight that where it's appropriate in your application, whether it's in your accomplishments or in your CV. Even mention this if it's relevant in your project statement. But for the fairness across the applicant pool and also for our reviewers, we really want to keep the materials that people are submitting to the ones that that are the required components. Let's see. Okay. Just going through and reading questions. Okay, so for the multi-country awards, I'll take a few more minutes. Let's see, it's 4:30 now, so I can definitely take a few more minutes and answer some more questions. For multi-country awards, so like the Global Scholar Program or the Africa Regional Research Program where you can do one or two countries or any of the others where you can do multiple, those awards are naturally designed for multiple countries. So for the Global Scholar Award, you saw where I was able to enter Romania and Kenya in that, or I could add a third country. For the Africa Regional Research Program, you could apply to do research in one country in sub-Saharan Africa or two. So there's naturally a spot in the application to enter either one or two countries in that. So you don't have to select like Romania, the award for Romania and the award for Kenya, for example. You could just select that one kind of award, and then it will allow you to select the countries to do that. Just make sure that the countries that you're selecting are ones that are in the awards catalog and not other countries, and that they're part of that particular regional program. Okay, so I have a question about, so some awards are listed as all disciplines awards in the catalog, but then you may see specific disciplines being desired. If that award is open to all disciplines, then it really is open to all disciplines. But I would look more carefully at the award, and if you still have questions, use that. Contact us, the contact information there, to contact my colleagues because they'll know more specifically. I definitely am not going to tell you that I can keep track of all that for as many countries as we work with without actually checking the awards here. And I want to get to as many questions as I can. Let's see. For invitation letters. So if you have an institution that you're going to be working with and then maybe another community organization or another institution that you're going to be working with, you can definitely include invitations from both of those. Again, you'll just want to merge those letters into one file before uploading them. Let's see. If you have obtained any of your degrees abroad, you can enter that information on your degrees. That would be the logical place to put that. You wouldn't have to put that on the experience abroad, unless that was in like the past 6 years. Okay, if you have any questions about eligibility, I would use that contact information in the award or email us at scholars, and I apologize, the email address on here is wrong. It should be scholars@iie.org, so that you'll definitely, will correct for the version that you see online after. So let me actually scroll back to that first page so you have that email address. It's scholars@iie.org. So if I'm not getting to your question, because we have many, this is great. And you can go ahead and email us there. Clearly reading and talking at the same time is not, not the greatest thing right now. Okay, scrolling through, let's see if I can There's so many great questions here. I wish there were more time. Okay, so for the recommendation letters, there is a both minimum and maximum of 2. So there's a disadvantage, actually, of submitting more than 2 because we'll ask you to pick which one blindly, which one comes out of your application. Should the project statement reference the host institution? Yes, absolutely. If you have an idea of who your host will be, framing, using that to frame the project statement makes a lot of sense. If you don't know, that's also okay. And framing that application, it's just a different way of framing the project. And that's 2 different texts. That's part of why we don't have a lot of examples in the way of project statements on our website, because there's so many different ways of framing things and writing things and different writing styles. We've noticed even across the disciplines there's a lot of different writing styles and formats that people tend to use. So we don't want to be prescriptive of that. We do want to see you come through your project statement and your application. We want to encourage that creativity there. So let's see. Invitation letters, just as a quick reminder, we did extend that deadline for the invitations until October 15th. Now, you still have to submit your application by September. September 15th is the application deadline. So go ahead and submit. And then if your invitation letter comes in after that and by October 15th, then we can add that to your application. Use that contact information on the award description to email us, and we can work on uploading that to your application. Okay, so we are over time, and I want to be cognizant of your time and not take up all of your afternoon. I do want to say thank you so much for joining us this afternoon. Let me see if there's 1 or 2 more questions here that I can take before I close. So in terms of that project statement, I'm considering proposing a project in my field. Since the project will be peer-reviewed, can it be written at a really high technical level or level of detail? And that's a great question, and one that I think cuts across all disciplines, that we see applications that are very technically written and written to that particular field to really understand. But then when someone from another field is reading it, say someone in the later stages of the review process, in the host country or in the host country, that they may not fully appreciate what the proposal is saying, why it's important, how it's going to be conducted. So I think it's important to balance those 2 pieces, that you're addressing the technical aspects that someone would expect who's a peer in your field, but still making it very digestible, very understandable to someone who really isn't familiar with your field at all. They're not looking to someone else to kind of translate the project for them. We've definitely seen that in the review process, where trying to balance that, can be challenging. And we recognize that it's challenging for you as an applicant to balance that, which is where, you know, reaching out and asking someone to review your project statement before you submit it. I know I don't like asking for that kind of help myself, but it can really strengthen your application and make you think about maybe was obvious in your mind and maybe wasn't quite as obvious in writing. I know that we always, I myself sometimes do that. So getting it out of our head and on paper, whoever is reading that application may have questions and you're not going to be there to be able to answer them. So trying to answer them up front, again, preemptively answering them can be advantageous. So I'm going to close here shortly. Before I close, I do have a couple of parting comments. I do want to reiterate that applications are encouraged from academics and professionals from all disciplines representing the many types of institutional and professional affiliations. I urge you to utilize the resources on our website and to contact us with any applications. I do want you to remember that the review process has multiple stages where your application will be read by experts and non-experts alike, and that it has to make it through peer review before it can proceed to the in-country review. So thank you again for taking the time to attend this webinar this afternoon. We are recording this. With any luck, it will have recorded successfully. And we hope that you found it helpful, and we look forward to seeing your application soon. Best wishes, and take care.